damn in the shoes, so I had sneakers in my shoulder bag, just in case I had to chase down a bad guy. I turned onto Hamilton, and Andrew Cohn called.
"I have something for you," he said. "This is really good. Can you stop around?"
Andrew sounded excited. Maybe this was my lucky day. Hot dog. Connie was at her desk when I swung in.
"Uh-oh," she said. "Big hair and full face paint, high heels and a Barbie shirt. What's going on?"
"It's too complicated to explain." And I wasn't sure I understood anyway. "Where's Lula?"
"She's up the street. She's still on the diet. Went through all her meat in half an hour and had to walk up to the coffee shop for some bacon."
"Lula walked to the coffee shop? That's 2 blocks away. Lula never walks anywhere."
"She parked in back and got blocked in by someone. I guess she figured it was faster to walk."
"She must have really needed the bacon."
"She was on a mission."
I moseyed over to the door, looked up the street, and spotted Lula at the end of the block. She was walking fast in her Via Spiga heels, holding a white food bag against her chest. 2 dogs, a beagle and a golden retriever, trotted close behind Lula. A third dog crossed the street and joined the pack. Every couple steps, Lula would turn and yell something at the dogs. When the beagle jumped for the bag when Lula was half a block away, Lula let out a shriek and started running.
"Stop running!" I yelled at her. "You're making it worse! They think it's a game!"
They were snapping at her heels now and barking.
"Do something!" Lula yelled. "Shoot 'em!"
"Drop the bag! They want the bacon!"
"No way I'm giving up my bacon!"
Lula was running, knees high, arms pumping. She was wearing the Via Spigas and a short black spandex skirt that was hiked up to her waist, showing Hamilton Avenue what a big woman looks like in a red satin thong.
"Open the door!" Lula shouted. "I can make it! I'm almost there! Just hold the damn door open!"
Lula tossed the dogs a slice of bacon from the bag. The dogs dove after the bacon, and Lula rushed past me into the office. I slammed the door shut, and we all stood looking at the dogs milling around outside. Lula tugged her skirt down.
"Tank's out there, isn't he?"
"Yep."
"I explained pretty good about the pork chop, but I'm at a loss here."
"It speaks for itself," I said to Lula. Grease stains were starting to show through the bag.
"I love this diet," Lula said. "I love pork chops, and I love ribs, and I love bacon. I love bacon most of all."
Lula was eating bacon like it was popcorn, chomping on it out of the bag, rolling her eyes in gastronomic ecstasy.
"How much bacon do you have there?" Connie wanted to know.
3 pounds, minus the 1 strip I gave up to the dogs.
"Sounds like a lot of bacon," Connie said.
"I'm pushing the boundaries of science here," Lula said. "I'm going to be a supermodel with a smile on my face on account of I'm going to be full of bacon."
"I need to go to Tribro," I said. "I'm looking for someone to ride shotgun."
"That would be me," Lula said.
Lula and Tank waited in the lot while I went in to talk to Andrew Cohn.
"This is really good," Cohn said. "I had to tell you this in person. First thing this morning, I found an email from one of the people I do business with in Vegas, Bill Weber. He said Samuel Singh filled out a job application, and Weber was emailing to check references. I got so excited I called the guy. Got him out of bed. Forgot about the time change."
"Singh's in Vegas? And he was dumb enough to list you as a reference?" Cohn bobbed his head up and down, smiling wide.
"Yes."
"I bet he even gave a street address."
"He did."
Cohn slid a piece of paper my way with all the information neatly printed out.
"I told Weber about the visa bond, and he's going to string Singh along until you get there. You're going to go get him, right?"
"Right."
Lula was looking kind of sick when I got back to the car. "How much of that bacon did you eat?" I asked her.
"I ate it all. It didn't seem like so much while I was eating it, but it doesn't feel like it fits in my stomach now."
I called Ranger and told him about Singh. "He's in Vegas, waiting for you to go get him," I said.
"I'm having a small legal problem with Nevada on a weapons violation," Ranger said. "You're going to have to make the capture. Take Tank. I don't want you to go alone."
Good grief. Chapter 9 Lula was up straight in her seat.
What's this about Vegas?
Samuel Singh is in Vegas and Ranger can't make the capture. So either I go, or Vinny farms the capture out to a Vegas agency.
Don't even suggest farming it out. All my life I wanted to go to Vegas. I hear there's a shopping center that's just like being in Venice, with canals and boats and everything. And there's all those casinos and fancy hotels. There's a strip! The strip! I could get to see the strip!
Lula stopped and blinked.
You were going to take me, right?
Ranger wants me to go with Tank.
Tank? Are you shitting me?
Lula pulled back, eyes bugged out with the injustice of it all.
Huh. I get to go along on all the chicken shit stuff, sit in the car while you go into Tribro, and I'm the one goes to the back door when you go to the front door on a bust. I always get the back door. Do I complain? Hell no. I guess I know where I stand here.
I narrowed my eyes at her. Are you done?
No way. I'm not done, and I'm feeling anxious now. I need a burger or something.
You just ate 3 pounds of bacon.
Yeah, but the dogs ate one of those strips.
I drove out of the lot and headed for the office. Okay, fine, I'll take you to Vegas if you can clear it with Connie.
I knew it, Lula said. I knew you wouldn't go without me. We're a team, right? We're like those two cops in the Lethal Weapon movies. We're like Mel Gibson and Danny Glover.
More like Thelma and Louise driving off a cliff. The office was quiet when we walked in. No Mrs. Apicenja, no Vinny, only Connie sitting at her desk reading the latest Nora Roberts. I found Singh, I told her. He's in Vegas.
Vegas? I love Vegas,
Connie said.
You see, everybody's been to Vegas but me, Lula said. It's not fair. I lead a deprived life. Bad enough I grew up underprivileged and all, and now I'm the only one not been to Vegas.
Let me go get my violin, Connie said.
What do you want to do about this now that I've found him? I asked Connie. Can we forcibly bring him back? Has he violated his bond agreement?
The bond agreement states that he can't leave the tri-state area without permission, so the answer is yes, you can forcibly bring him back. I'll page Vinny to double-check, but I'm sure he'll want Singh brought back here.
Ranger can't go to Vegas to make the capture, I told Connie. Connie nodded.
He's got an outstanding weapons violation. Stepped on a few toes last time he was in Nevada. His lawyer's working on it.
So that leaves me, I guess, I said. And Lula.
I get the picture, Connie said.
And Tank, I added. Ranger said I should take Tank.
Anyone else?
Connie asked, turning to the computer.
You want a permit for a parade?
Boy, this here's gonna be fun, Lula said. And what with this new diet, I'll probably be real thin by the time I get there.
It's only a 5-hour flight, I told her.
Yeah, but this diet works fast.
Okay, here we go, Connie said. I've got us on a flight out of Newark at 4 o'clock. We have a plane change in Chicago, and we arrive in Vegas at 9. It's not a direct flight, but it's the best I can do.
Us?
You don't think I'm going to send you and Lula to Vegas without me, do you? I'm feeling lucky. I'm going straight to the craps table. I'm not going to page Vinny either. I'm going to leave him a note.
We didn't have a lot of time if we were going to catch a 4 o'clock flight. Here's the plan, I said. It doesn't make sense to take more than one car. I'll tell Tank he's driving, and he can pick all of us up. Everyone go home and pack and be ready to go in an hour. And remember, there's tight security now. No guns, no knives, no pepper spray, no nail files.
What?
How am I supposed to travel without a nail file?
Lula wanted to know. You have to put it in your suitcase and check your suitcase.
What if I break a nail getting onto the plane and I got to file it down?
You'll have to gnaw it down with your teeth. I'll get you in an hour. Tank was parked in front of the bonds office, and he was being surveillant. I went out to him and gave him the game plan. He said his assignment was to stick to me, and he didn't need to pack. Not even a toothbrush? I asked. Not even an extra pair of tighty-whities? Tank almost smiled. Okay, then. I ran to my car and took off for my apartment. I hit the ground running when I got to my building. I took the stairs two at a time, barefoot, with my shoes in my hands. Tank was ahead of me in the hall. He opened my apartment door and stepped inside. 4 8x10 glossies were spread across the floor. We bent to look at them without touching anything, They were photos of a man with half his head blown away. Like the first set of photos, they were enlarged to hide the victim's identity. My first thought, of course, was of Carl Rosen.
"Do you recognize him?" Tank asked.
"No." Tank closed the front door and gave me a gun.
"Stay here while I check the rest of the apartment."
Moments later, he was back.
"No one here. No more photos that I can see. I didn't go through your drawers."
"Okay," I said. "Here's what we do. We leave these photos exactly where they are. We try not to disturb any prints that might have been left. I pack as fast as possible, and we get the hell out. When we're ready to board, I'll call Morelli. If I call him now, I'll have to stay for questioning, and we'll never make the plane."
"Works for me," Tank said.
10 minutes later, I was out of the apartment, a change of clothes and essential makeup in a tote bag slung over my shoulder. We left my car in the lot and took Tank's SUV. Connie lived in the burg, so she was next on the pickup list. We beeped once when we pulled to the curb, and Connie hustled out to us. Connie's house was a narrow single family, similar to my parents' duplex, but half of Connie's house had been chopped away. Vito Grecki used to live in the adjoining half-house. Vito was a mob bagman who came in with a light bag one time too many. Next day, Vito's house mysteriously caught fire, and Vito turned up in the Camden landfill. Fortunately for Connie, the fire didn't go beyond the brick firewall between the two adjoining houses. Connie bought Vito's fire-gutted half at a bank auction, tore the trashed house down, and never rebuilt. Connie liked having the empty lot. She put a big freestanding pool with a wraparound cedar deck in the newly created side yard, and she set up a shrine to the Virgin for sparing her house. Lula lived on the other side of Hamilton, down by the train station. There wasn't a lot of money in the neighborhood, but year after year it held its own. Lula rented a tiny two-room apartment on the second floor of a small house. The house was gray clabbered with touches of Victorian trim. Last year, the owner painted the trim pink. In a weird way, it seemed just right for Lula. Lula was on the curb waiting when we drove down her street. She had two huge suitcases with her, a big leather purse hung on her shoulder, and she was holding a large canvas tote. Tank smiled.
"I bet they're all filled with pork chops."
"We're only staying overnight," I told Lula when she climbed into the back seat next to Connie.
"I know that, but I like to be prepared, and I couldn't decide what to wear. I got a whole suitcase filled with shoes. You can't go to Vegas without a change of shoes." "How many shoes did you bring?" Lula asked me.
"The shoes I'm wearing and sneakers."
"How about you?" she asked Connie.
4 pairs of shoes," Connie said.
"Dog," Lula said to Tank, "how many shoes you got?"
Tank looked at Lula in the rearview mirror and didn't say anything. Lula turned and checked out the luggage in the back of the SUV.
"I don't even see any Tank suitcases," Lula said. "Where's your suitcases?"
"Tank hasn't got any suitcases," I said. "Tank's traveling light."
"Where's he keeping his extra tidy whities?" Lula wanted to know.
Tank cut another look at Lula.
"I don't wear tidy whities," he said. "You devil!" Lula yelled. "I bet you go commando!"
Lula and Connie fanned themselves in the back seat. Tank kept his eyes on the road, but I could see him smiling. An hour later, we were in the terminal, standing in line. 73 people in front of us. An airline employee was going person to person, suggesting electronic ticket holders use the automatic ticketing machines. We looked over at the machines with flocks of people gathered around them.
"I don't know," Lula said. "Those people trying to use those machines look pissed off. Don't look to me like they're having a whole lot of luck getting tickets out of those machines. Looks to me like after they waste some time, they give up and get back in line over here."
We sent Connie over to investigate, and we stayed in line. After a couple minutes, Connie came back.
"I think they're just decoys," Connie said. "I never saw anybody have any luck getting a ticket out of them."
"I bet I know," Lula said. "You go over there and try to get a ticket, and you give him your name and address. And then you don't get a ticket, but you get put on some list for junk mail and telephone solicitors. I bet the airlines make money selling those lists." I bet they get extra on account of their lists of gullible people who buy anything. You didn't give them your name and address, did you, Connie?
That's ridiculous, Connie said.
And because she was snippy when she said it, we all knew she gave the machine her name and address. 45 minutes later, we got to the counter and got ticketed. Lula checked two of her bags. Tank didn't have any bags. I carried my single tote bag with me. Connie had one small suitcase on rollers, which she checked.
We're on our way now, Lula said. Boy, this is going to be fun. Hold on. What are we doing in another line?
This is the line to go through the security check, I told her.
Say what?
We inched our way along again. I had a low-grade headache from the terminal noise and the tedium, and I had a backache from an hour of carrying the tote on my shoulder. 20 minutes ago, I dropped the tote onto the floor, and now I kicked it along ahead of me. I suspected I was growing pale, and in another 20 minutes, I'd look like I'd spent 15 years at Tribro testing nuts and bolts. I was first in line. Lula stood behind me, then Connie. Tank was in line behind Connie. We showed our tickets. We flashed our photo IDs. I approached the conveyor belt leading to the scanner. I placed my tote and my purse on the belt. A security attendant asked me to place my shoes on the belt as well. I looked down at the strappy sandals I'd put on first thing this morning. Brown leather, and not a single part of the shoe thicker than an eighth of an inch, with the exception of the slim wood-stacked stiletto heel, which was a quarter of an inch. Guess security thought I had a bomb in the shoe. Bombs must frequently be hidden in women's strappy sandals. I took the shoes off and shuffled barefoot along the filthy floor through the metal detector. I didn't set the detector off, but the security attendant told me I was a random female, so I was pulled aside and asked to stand spread eagle. I suppose they thought I had box cutters hidden under my skin-tight, slightly see-through white stretchy shirt. I was wanded and released. My shoes were returned to me after careful scrutiny. An attendant in rubber gloves extracted all the items from my tote. 2 pairs of bikini panties, a pair of jeans, 2 little white t-shirts, white socks, sneakers, a travel box of tampons, just in case, hairspray, roller brush, assorted cosmetics. 40 or 50 people passing by admired the panties, and a couple women suggested a different brand of tampon. The items were returned to my bag, and I was told I could continue on my way. Lula was causing a scene behind me. She had to go through the same routine, and they found fried chicken in her purse.
You're not allowed to take unpackaged food past security, the attendant said to Lula. What am I supposed to eat? Lula wanted to know. I'm on a diet to be a supermodel. I need this fried chicken. Suppose they don't feed me on the plane. There are kiosks by the gate that sell food, Lula was told.
I looked at the fried chicken displayed on the examining table. A leg and a breast. I guess security was on the lookout for chicken-like bombs.
I don't like this, Lula said, shouldering her bags. Had to take my shoes off, my jacket off, got felled up under my bra clip, had to take my belt off. And look at this. I can't button the top snap on my stretch pants, and now everybody knows. This here's been a humiliating experience, and on top of it all, they took my chicken.
Connie had breezed through without a hitch.
That's the way it is now, Connie said. You want to be safe, right? This is just a small thing to keep us safe.
Shut up, Lula said. I hate people who don't get searched.
Her eyes were wild, and her lower lip was jutting out.
I'm feeling a lot of anxiety, Lula said. If this was supposed to make me feel safe, it isn't working. All I can think of now is terrorists. I wasn't thinking of terrorists before. I need some ham. Where's the place they sell ham?
It was announced that our plane was boarding, and Tank still hadn't cleared security. I knew he didn't have weapons on him. He'd locked everything in the truck when we parked. They brought a dog in, and 2 armed guards moved closer. Apparently they were picking up traces of explosives on his shoes and clothes. Wow, big surprise there. He had his identification displayed, including a license to carry, but security was having none of it. He cut his eyes to me, and I sent him a blank-faced look back. No way was I going to come to his rescue. I wasn't taking any chances on guilt by association. I was afraid the airport Gestapo would haul my ass off to a back room and give me a body cavity search. I grabbed Lula and pulled her along. Connie followed. We only had a couple minutes until boarding.
What about Tank? Lula asked.
He'll catch up with us.
Maybe.
We got to the gate, and Lula was wide-eyed, looking everywhere.
I don't see no kiosk with fried chicken, she said. I just see donuts and ice cream and bagels and big pretzels. I can't eat none of that food. Where's the friggin' meat?
Maybe we'll get something on the plane, I said. We'll be in the air over dinner time, so maybe we'll get some dinner. Yeah, right. If we were flying first class, we might get a bag of peanuts. We were seated three across, six rows back in coach. Lula was on the aisle. I sat next to her. Tank's seat was empty. Connie sat on the other side of the aisle. I called Morelli and told him about the photos. And here's the thing, I said to Morelli. I'm sort of on a plane. Singh is in Vegas, and I'm going out to apprehend him. So I was thinking maybe you could just let yourself in and, take charge. Silence. Joe?
This is the sort of thing Ranger usually takes.
He has a problem with the state of Nevada.
Okay. Let me rerun this, Morelli said. You went home to pack, and you found more snuff photos. Then you drove to the airport and waited until you were boarded before calling me, so it was impossible for me to bring you back to Trenton.
Yep, that's about it. The conversation deteriorated pretty quickly after that, so I said goodbye and shut my phone off. The plane filled, and the usual announcements were made. No Tank. I was feeling a little worried without my bodyguard. I had Connie and Lula with me. I liked Connie and Lula, but I suspected they were more liability than asset. The flight attendants closed the doors, and the plane began taxiing. Lula was singing with her headset on and her eyes shut. Connie was talking to the woman next to her. All right, calm down, I told myself. Probably flying to Vegas was safer than staying in Trenton. Tank would get the next plane, and everything would be fine. If I'd stayed with Tank, I wouldn't be on the plane. I would have had to call Morelli, and he would have insisted I return to Trenton. Minutes after taking off, it was announced that no food or beverages would be served.
What about peanuts? Lula yelled out. Don't we even get any freaking peanuts?
Lula turned to me.
I want to get off this plane. I'm hungry and I'm uncomfortable. And look at the seat in front of me. It's all ripped. How am I supposed to have confidence when they can't even keep their seat sewed up? I bet some terrorist was practicing on that seat.
I put my finger to my eye.
You getting that nervous eye twitch back? Lula asked. It's from this plane, isn't it? I feel nervous too. I'm just a bundle of nerves.
It's from you, I said. Put your headset back on and listen to your music. An hour into the flight, Lula was fidgeting again.
I smell coffee, she said. I bet they're going to give us coffee. Probably they feel bad about treating us like a bunch of cows and they're going to hand out coffee.
She sniffed the air.
Hey, I smell real food. I smell something cooking.
She hung over the armrest and looked up the aisle at the front of the plane.
It's not first class, she said. I can see into first class and they're not getting any food either.
Now I was smelling it. Definitely coffee, and maybe a tomato sauce and pasta dish.
And cookies baking. It's like there's ghosts up there, Lula said. I haven't seen a flight attendant walk down the aisle since we took off. It's like they vanished and their ghosts are cooking. I'm dying here. I'm starving. I'm getting weak.
Connie looked over.
What's going on?
I smell coffee, Lula said. I must be hallucinating from hunger.
Maybe the flight attendants are making coffee for the pilots, Connie said.
I don't like the sound of that, Lula said. That sounds like an emergency, like the pilots are tired. Just my luck, I get on a plane with a pilot who was up all night. I'm going to be really pissed off if he falls asleep and we crash and we all die and it's before I get to Vegas.
Connie went back to her magazine, but Lula was still leaning over the armrest into the aisle.
I can see them, Lula said. It's the flight attendants. Someone pulled the curtain aside, and I can see the flight attendants eating. They're having coffee and fresh baked cookies. Can you freaking believe it? They're not even going to offer any to us.
I was starting to think crashing and dying might be the way to go. Compared to another 2 hours in the air, crashing and dying held some appeal. Lula's eyes were slitty, and her forehead was scrunched up. She reminded me of a bull pawing the ground, nostrils flaring, shaggy head steaming.
"I'm not calling them flight attendants anymore," Lula said. "I'm calling them stewardesses. See how they like that?"
"Keep it down," Connie said. "Maybe they've been working all day and they didn't get a chance to eat."
"I've been working all day," Lula said. "I didn't get a chance to eat. You see anybody feeding me? I guess not. Look at me. I'm beside myself. I feel like the Hulk, like I'm getting all swollen up with frustration."
"Well, take it easy," I said. "You'll burst something."
"You know what this is?" Lula said. "This is plain rage."
Plain rage isn't allowed. It got taken off the allowed activities list along with eating. If you make a scene, they'll haul you off in leg irons.
"I'm tired of being strapped in here, too," Lula said. "This seatbelt's too tight and it's giving me gas."
"Anything else?"
"There's no movie."
When we landed at Chicago, I positioned myself between Lula and the flight attendants. "Keep your head down and walk," I told Lula. "Don't look at them. Don't talk to them. Don't grab any of them by the throat. We need to get on the next plane. Just keep thinking about Vegas." Our connecting flight was 10 gates down. We started walking, and almost immediately we hit fast food. Lula hurried over and ordered 7 double cheeseburgers. She threw the buns away and ate the rest. "I'm impressed," I said to Lula. "You're really sticking to this diet." Hard to believe she was going to lose weight on it, but at least she was trying. An hour later, our row was called to board, and Lula, Connie, and I got in line. We reached the gate, and I was pulled aside to be searched. Random female.
"Step over here," the security attendant said, "and take your shoes off."
I looked down at the sandals. "What could you possibly be looking for in these sandals?" I asked.
"It's standard procedure."
"I've already gone through this at Newark."
"Sorry, you're going to have to take your shoes off if you want to get on the plane."
"Uh-oh," Lula said to me. "Your face is getting red. Remember about getting to Vegas? Just take the freaking shoes off."
"It's not like it's personal," Connie said. "You should be happy security precautions are in place."
"Easy for you to say," I told her. "You're not the one getting picked on. You're not the one getting singled out for a second time. Your tampons and panties aren't getting pawed through." I stared down at the shoes. There wasn't any way to hide a weapon in them, but I thought I could do some pretty good damage if I hit the security idiot in the head with one. Spike heel directly into the eyeball, I thought. I visualized the bleeding eyeball falling out of the woman's head and felt much more calm. I stepped out of my sandals and waited peacefully for them to be scrutinized. When we were seated on the plane, Lula turned to me.
"You know, sometimes you can be real scary. I don't know what you were thinking back there when you took those shoes off, but all the hair stood up on the back of my neck."
I had airport rage.
"Fucking A," Lula said.
Lula had airport rage when we landed, and her luggage wasn't there. Connie had us booked into the Luxor. It was on the Strip, and because the bail bonds conferences were held there every year, we got good rates.
"Look at this,"
Lula said, head tipped back, taking it all in.
"It's a freaking pyramid. It's like being in some big-ass Egyptian tomb. I love this. I'm ready to gamble. Out of my way. I'm looking for the slots. Where's the blackjack tables?"
I didn't know where Lula's energy came from. I'd exhausted myself trying to stay calm while mentally maiming airport employees, screaming kids, and security personnel. "I'm going to bed," I told Lula. "We need to get an early start tomorrow, so don't stay out too late."
"I can't believe I'm hearing this. You're in Vegas and you're going to bed? Uh-uh, girlfriend, I don't think so."
"I don't gamble. I'm not good at it."
"You can play slots. There's nothing to slots. You put your money in and you push a button."
"I'm feeling hot for the craps," Connie said. "I'm going to drop my suitcase off in the room and then I'm going to hit the craps tables."
"You see," Lula said to me, "you don't come with. I'm going to be all alone on account of Connie's going to play craps."
Lula had a point. Maybe it wasn't a good idea to have Lula all alone in Vegas. "Okay," I said. "I'll tag along, but I'm not playing. I don't know what I'm doing, and I always lose."
"You gotta play once," Lula said. "It wouldn't be right if you came to Vegas and didn't even play one slot. I bet there's even a law that says you gotta play a slot."
15 minutes later, we were checked into our room. We all applied fresh lipstick, and we were ready to roll.
"Look out, Vegas! Here I come," Lula said, closing the door behind us.
"I'm wearing my lucky shoes," Connie said, leading the way down the hall. "I can't lose in my lucky shoes."
It was the first time I'd ever walked any distance behind Connie, and I was knocked over by the sight in front of me. Connie was a small Italian version of Mae West. Her hips were big and round, and her boobs were big and round, and when Connie walked, everything was in motion. Connie swung her ass down the hall. Connie was a broad. Connie belonged in a gangster movie set in Chicago during Prohibition. We got to the elevator, and the three of us stood waiting for the doors to open, cackling and preening in front of the hall mirror. We stepped into the elevator, went down one floor, and two guys got on. One was about 5'10", had a big beer belly, and looked to be in his 60s. The other was average build, early 40s, and was short enough that his eyes were even with my breasts. They were both dressed in tight white jumpsuits with bell-bottoms and big stand-up collars. The jumpsuits were decorated with sequins and glittered under the elevator lights. They had huge rings on their fingers and shoe-polished black pompadour hairdos with long sideburns. They were wearing name tags. The big guy was named Gus, and the little guy was named Wayne.
"We're Elvis impersonators," the little guy said.
"No shit, Sherlock," Lula said.
"We're part of a convention. There are 1,400 Elvis impersonators here at the hotel."
"We just got here," Lula said. "We're going down to play some slots." "We're going to the show," Gus said. "We hear Tom Jones is singing in the lounge."
Lula's eyes got the size of duck eggs and popped out of her eye sockets.
"Tom Jones? Are you shitting me? I love Tom Jones."
"You should come with us," Wayne said. "We wouldn't mind having a couple chicks tagging along, right, Gus?"
Lula looked down at little Wayne.
"Listen up, Shorty," she said. "I don't do that patronizing, sexist, chick shit."
"We gotta say things like that," Wayne told her. "We're Elvis impersonators. We're Vegas, baby."
"Oh, yeah. I guess I could see that. Sorry," Lula said.
The elevator hit the casino floor, and we all got out and hustled across the casino to the lounge. Me, Connie, Lula, and two over-the-hill Elvis impersonators. We reached the lounge and were stopped by a crush of people waiting to get in.
"Oh, man," Lula said. "Look at this crowd. We're not going to get in." "They always let Elvis in," the big guy said,
and he started bumping people out of the way with his belly.
"Excuse me, the king's coming through," he'd say,
and then he'd sort of snarl and curl his lip the way Elvis used to. We were packed up behind him, moving in his wake, all of us getting excited about seeing Tom Jones, willing to step on a few toes to do it. Gus got us a position close to the stage, off to the side. The room lights were dim, and the stage was washed in red light. A band was playing. We ordered drinks, and Tom Jones was introduced. The minute Jones came on stage, Lula went apeshit. Lula didn't care about anything but Tom Jones.
"Hey, Tom, honey, look over here," she yelled out. "Look at Lula!"
All around us, women were throwing room keys and panties onto the stage. And then, from the corner of my eye, I caught sight of Lula pitching a giant, hot pink satin thong at Tom Jones. It was the biggest thong I'd ever seen. It was a King Kong thong. It hit Tom Jones square in the face. Whap!
"Holy crap!"
Connie said. Tom Jones staggered back a step, snagged the thong from off his face, looked at it, and forgot the words to the song he was singing. The band was playing, but Tom Jones was just standing there, staring at the thong.
"Maybe I should throw my bra, too," Lula said.
"No!"
Connie and I said, worried Tom Jones would go into cardiac arrest at the sight.
"Not a good idea. Overkill."
Tom Jones snapped out of his coma, stuffed the thong into his tux pocket, and went back to singing.
"I don't think Tom Jones looks all that good," Connie said to me. "He looks different somehow, like he's had a facelift that went wrong."
"And he's sort of fat," I said, "and he can't sing anymore."
"That's blasphemous to say about Tom Jones," Lula said. "You can't go dissing Tom Jones."
Wayne leaned across Lula.
It's not Tom Jones. I thought you knew that. It's a Tom Jones impersonator. They're having a convention here, too.
What? Lula yelled. I gave my underpants to an imposter.
He's pretty good, though, Gus said. He's got a lot of the moves down pretty good.
I want my underpants back, Lula shouted to the stage. I don't go giving away perfectly good underpants to imposters. You got my underpants under false pretenses, and you can't even sing. I bet these two Elvis impersonators could sing better than you.
The guy on the stage stopped singing, shaded his eyes against the lights with his hand, and squinted over at us.
Elvis impersonators? I've got some goddamn Elvis impersonators at my show?
Uh-oh, Wayne said. Elvis impersonators and Tom Jones impersonators don't get along.
A low rumble went through the crowd.
Elvis impersonators, they were grumbling. The nerve!
Get 'em! Someone shouted. Get the dirty, lousy Elvis impersonators!
Someone reached for little Wayne, and Lula stepped in.
Hold on here, she said. We came with these guys. They're good guys. They got us in here.
Get the Elvis impersonators and their bitches, someone yelled. The Elvis impersonators have bitches.
The room was packed, and we were getting jostled and shoved. A Cher impersonator with a beard and mustache reached for Connie. Connie cold-cocked him, and he went to the floor like a sack of sand. After that, it was bedlam. Lula took to the stage to wrestle Tom Jones for her underpants, and Connie and I scrambled after Lula to help with the thong retrieval. We were getting pelted with beer nuts and wasabi peas, and I could see casino security at the door trying to make its way through the crowd. Lula ripped the thong out of Tom Jones's hands, and we all ran backstage.
Which way out?
I asked a greasy-haired guy in the wings. The greasy-haired guy pointed to a door, and we all crashed through it, ran down a hall, through another door, and found ourselves back on the casino floor. Connie smoothed out her skirt and felt to see if she had any beer nuts stuck in her hair.
That was fun, she said. I'm gonna go play craps now.
Yeah,
Lula said, stuffing her thong into her purse.
I'm hitting the slots. I'm gonna start there.
Wait a minute, I said to Lula. Where'd you get the thong?
I had it in my purse, Lula said. I read somewhere that you should carry emergency undies when you travel.
Lula squinted at my hair.
You got something green slimed in your hair, she said. It looks like someone got you with one of those fancy drinks.
Great. I'm going back to the room, I said. I'm going to wash my hair and go to bed. I've had enough excitement for one day.
What about the slots?
Lula wanted to know. Tomorrow. Maybe. At 7 in the morning, Lula and Connie still hadn't returned to the room. I pulled on jeans and a Lakewood Blue Claws t-shirt that had the message, Got Crabs? Printed on the front. I covered my hair with a baseball cap and went downstairs to look for Lula. I found her in the cafe eating breakfast with Connie. Lula had about 2 dozen scrambled eggs and 5 pounds of sausage links on her plate. Connie had coffee. Lula looked wired and not much different from everyday Lula. Connie looked like she'd died and come back from the dead. Connie's black hair was completely frazzled, sticking out at odd places. Her mascara had smudged, making the bags under her eyes more pronounced. Most shocking of all, she was without lipstick. I'd never seen Connie without lipstick. I took a seat, and I snitched a sausage link from Lula.
What time is it?
Connie asked. 7:30, I told her.
Day or night?
Day. The cafe was located on the perimeter of the casino floor. That's the way it always is in a casino. Everything opens to the floor. The casino was business as usual, but the attendance was light. The tables were populated mostly by bedraggled men in shirt sleeves, leftovers from the night. The slots had a more alert crowd, early risers getting a jump on the day. I wasn't much of a gambler, but I liked the flash and color of the casino. I liked the neon lights, the bells and whistles, and the ka-ching of money being won and lost.
Las Vegas never closes, Lula said. Can you believe it? And I haven't been out of the hotel yet, but there's supposed to be an Eiffel Tower out there, and the Brooklyn Bridge, and all kinds of shit.
What did you do all night?
I started with the slots, Lula said, but I wasn't having any luck there, so I went over to the blackjack tables. I did pretty good, and then I did really bad, and here I am. broke. Good thing Vinny's buying me breakfast.
Connie had her head down on the table.
I lost all my money. I drank too much. And I lost my shoes.
We all looked under the table. Sure enough, Connie didn't have any shoes.
I left them someplace, Connie said. I don't know where.
That's not even the best part, Lula said to me. Ask Connie about the photograph.
Connie pulled a cardboard-framed photo out of her big leather shoulder bag. It was a picture of Connie and a short guy in a powder blue tuxedo. The short guy had sideburns and an Elvis hairdo. Connie was holding a bouquet of flowers.
I think I might have gotten married to an Elvis impersonator,
Connie said, dragging herself to her feet.
I'm going to bed. Wake me up when you get Sing, and I'll do the paperwork for the locals.
Lula watched Connie stagger away.
I wouldn't hardly recognize her without lipstick, Lula said. She sat down, and I didn't know who she was at first.
We have to snatch Sing today, I said to Lula. Are you going to be up for it?
Damn straight I'm up for it. I'm just getting started. I'm like that Energizer Rabbit dude. How are we going to get this guy?
Sing applied for a job at a small casino downtown. My contact's name is Louis Calafonte. He's the casino manager. Cone said I should call Calafonte at 9 o'clock. I'm hoping we can get Sing to come into the casino. It'll be easier to apprehend him there.
Get Sing to come in tonight so I can have the day to go shopping. I gotta see the talking statues at Caesar's, and we gotta stay to see the fountains at the Bellagio. It wouldn't be right if we left before we saw the fountains.
Shopping would be fun, but there were other things on my mind. Photos of dead people. Carl Rosen missing. Red roses and white carnations. Plus, I've never made an out-of-state apprehension, and I was counting on Tank's help. I ate a second sausage, and I punched Ranger's number into my phone. Have you heard from Tank? I asked Ranger.
Tank's here. By the time he got security straight, he couldn't get a flight out. The earliest flight we could get him on is today's 4 o'clock.
Probably we don't need him. Connie has me on a 7:30 out of Vegas. I don't expect problems. Connie will get me the paperwork necessary to bring Sing back restrained, and she'll make the arrangements with the local police. Now, if I just felt half as confident as I sounded, I'd be in good shape. Unfortunately, the hardware's packed in Lula's suitcase, and the airline's lost both her bags.
I'll have everything you need delivered to your room by noon.
Did Tank tell you about the photos?
Yeah, and I heard from Morelli, too. He's not happy.
Did Carl Rosen ever show up?
You don't want to know about Rosen, babe.
I blew out a sigh and disconnected. Even at 7 in the morning, smoke hung in the air on the casino floor. I squinted into the haze and wondered if they were matching the new photos to Rosen. I called Morelli at home. When he didn't pick up, I realized it was 10 on the East Coast, and I tried his cell.
Yeah,
Morelli answered, halfway through the morning and sounding pissed off. Guess who? Silence. I grimaced at Lula.
He should chill, Lula said, shoveling eggs. We're working hard here. We got a job to do.
I heard that, Morelli said. Tell Lula I've got an outstanding arrest from when she was on the street.
Tell me about the photos and Carl Rosen.
They're working on the photos now, but at first glance, they look like a match. We found Rosen late last night. Someone dumped him at the corner of Laurel Drive and River Road. He had a white carnation stuffed down his pants, and you've seen the photos, so I don't have to describe his head.
Any suspects?
A few. No arrests, if that's what you're asking.
I wasn't looking forward to returning to Trenton. It felt safer in Vegas, far away from Carl Rosen and the carnation freak. I could easily stay here and sit by the pool and do a little shopping and tell Vinny the apprehension was more complicated than expected.
Connie tells me you have a flight out at 7:30 tonight, Morelli said. Do you already have Sing in custody?
No. If I have problems today, Connie will change the flight. There was a moment's pause.
Are you expecting problems?
I'm hoping for problems. If there are problems, I might get to stay another day, maybe another week. It feels safer here than it does in Trenton. I disconnected and waited while Lula ate the last sausage.
From the conversation I just heard between you and Ranger, I'm guessing they didn't deliver my bags yet, Lula said. So I'm going shopping. I gotta get some clothes. All that dumbass airline gave me was a toothbrush.
I thought you gambled all your money away.
Yeah, but if I shop here in a hotel, it goes on our room bill and Vinny pays. It's only right he pays anyway on account of this is a business disaster.
I returned to the room and took a shower while Lula went shopping. We were all packed together to save some money. The room had an Egyptian motif and two queen-size beds. Connie was sound asleep with a pillow over her face. She didn't seem to be bothered by my presence, so I ordered room service coffee in a bakery basket and put a call in to Lou Calafanti. Lou suggested he call Singh and ask him to come in to discuss a job. I was expecting a handcuff delivery sometime this morning, so I asked that Singh be given an early afternoon appointment. Calafanti said he'd call back as soon as everything was in place. I could see the mountains from my room. They were shimmering in the morning heat, smoky blue, lost behind haze. The valley floor leading to the mountains was flat desert, broken by roads and strip malls in the backside of the strip. I could see the billboard and neon sign for the Rio Hotel and Casino. There was no place else on Earth like Vegas. Even Disney couldn't compete with this. I'd been to Vegas twice before, several years ago, and then last year for the PBUS conference. I was always shocked at how fast Vegas grew. Trailer parks, McMansions, artificial lakes and fountains, bigger and more spectacular hotels and malls. They erupted overnight. It was magic. Good old-fashioned American capitalist magic. It was close to 9 when Lula came bustling in.
"Just give me a minute to jump in the shower and get dressed and I'm ready to roll," Lula said. "This here's a shopping paradise. They got stuff here that I didn't even know existed. Everything's spandex and sequins. It's a retired hoe's dream come true."
By 10, we were in a rental Taurus heading out of town. Lula was reading the map, directing me to the address Singh had given Calafanti on his job application. I wasn't making the bust at Singh's house, but I wanted to see it anyway. I wanted to make sure nothing weird was going on. Much of the sprawl in Vegas is given up to high-end gated golf course communities. We were deep into the sprawl, but we were on the wrong side of the tracks. We were driving past block after block of small, dusty southwest houses, not a ghetto situation of graffiti and uncollected trash, more an area of neglect by necessity. Screen doors were askew. Yards were hard-scrabble weed and desert dirt. Cars had seen a lot of hot, dry miles. Connie had checked on Singh's address before we left and found he was living with a woman named Susan Liu, a cocktail waitress at Caesar's. So here was the Susan in Singh's life. I was guessing Singh met Liu on his business trip, communicated with her by email, and decided to move in. The house was typical of the neighborhood. It was a modest, single-story stucco bungalow. A Joshua tree grew in the front yard. The small backyard was fenced. I didn't see Boo, but then most of the yard wasn't visible from the street.
"Sure would be tempted to knock on his door and drag his bony ass out here," Lula said. "Then we could lock him in the trunk and go shopping."
"We aren't that good," I said to Lula. "We don't even have handcuffs. I'm not taking a chance on screwing this up." My cell phone rang. It was Lou Calafanti. He was calling to tell me that he hadn't been able to get in touch with Singh. He'd spoken to Susan Liu, and Liu told him Singh went out early this morning and hadn't yet returned. Liu expected Singh back by lunchtime. Calafanti set up a tentative meeting for 2 o'clock.
"Don't you hate that?" Lula said. "Right in the middle of our time here. How are we supposed to have any fun like that? I hear Siegfried and Roy got their tigers on display. How many chances you think we're going to get to see Siegfried's tiger?"
"Just help me get Singh back to the hotel room and you can go off for a couple hours. We don't have to leave for the airport until 6:30.
"Yeah, it's not like I gotta check luggage."
We returned to the room a little after 1. Connie was still asleep with a pillow over her face. There was a small sealed cardboard box on the coffee table, the delivery from Ranger, and there was a small floral arrangement next to it. Red roses and white carnations. The card with the flowers read, "You're one step behind me again. Singh's been eliminated. The game continues." I was totally dumbstruck.
"Hey," Lula said, "are you okay?"
I took a step back, bumped into a chair, and sat down hard. I went lightheaded for a moment. I hadn't been expecting this. I'd been caught totally off guard. The killer knew I was in Vegas. Even worse, he had to be here too. I was pretty sure he was telling me he'd killed Singh, and according to Susan Liu, Singh was alive this morning. "I think he's dead," I said.
"Who's dead?"
"Singh." I dropped the card on the floor. Lula picked it up and read it.
"I don't get it," she said.
"Just give me a second and I'll explain it to you." I found my way to the bathroom, and I stood there until I was sure I wasn't going to throw up. Lula was at the bathroom door, watching. I put a hand up.
"I'm getting there," I said. "I was just caught by surprise and it knocked the air out of me."
I left the bathroom, walked to the desk, and reread the card. The card was standard hotel stock. The flowers had been sent through the hotel. I called the concierge and waited on hold while he traced the flowers down. He returned to tell me the order had been phoned in and placed on Carl Rosen's credit card. The hotel wasn't able to access the call origination number. Chapter 10. Lula was standing over Connie.
"Do you think she's dead? She's not moving under the pillow."
"Take the pillow off her."
"Not me. I hate dead. If she's dead, I don't want to see."
I walked over and took the pillow off Connie's face. Connie opened an eye and looked up at me.
"Did you bring Singh in?"
"No. I think Singh might be dead."
"Dead or alive," Connie said. "It's all the same to me."
She sat up in the bed.
"I can't get any sleep in this hotel. People keep coming in and out delivering stuff. Did you see you got flowers?"
"About the flowers," I said, and I told them about the carnation killer.
"Holy crap," Lula said. "Why didn't you tell me sooner?"
"I didn't know what to say. The whole thing is so bizarre. And the police wanted the details kept from the public while they tried to match the photos to a victim."
"Hey, I can keep a secret. Look at me. My mouth is zipped," Lula said.
"You can't keep a secret ever," I said. "You have no sense of secret."
"That's so not true. I didn't tell you about Joe and Terry Gilman, did I?"
For a couple beats, no one in the room said anything. We just stared at each other with our mouths open.
"I didn't say that," Lula said.
I felt my eyebrows pull together.
"What about Joe and Terry Gilman?"
"You keep doing that and you're going to need Botox," Lula said.
"Are you talking about the jumping out the window incident?"
"No, I'm talking about the coming out of the motel looking chummy incident."
"When?"
"I guess it must have been about 2 weeks ago. It was Saturday afternoon, and I was going shopping at Quaker Bridge, and you know how there are a couple motels on Route 1 that are mostly by the hour? Well, I saw them coming out of one of those skanky motels. It was the one with the blue trim and the wishing well in the front. I almost ran off the road."
"You're sure it was Joe and Terry?"
"I bet they were doing police business," Lula said. "That's why I didn't tell you. I knew you'd get that look that you got now, and you'd get all huffy and make a big thing for nothing."
I used my fingertips to smooth away the frown line in my forehead. "I don't get huffy. Do I look huffy?"
"Fucking A," Lula said.
At least she took my mind off the flower freak. It's always nice to have a choice of things to worry about. "Open the box from Ranger," I said to Lula. "I have to call Morelli and tell him about the flowers." Morelli answered on a sigh.
"Yeah."
I meant to start out with the facts about the flowers, but the wiring between my brain and my mouth got crossed, and I started with Terry Gilman. "So," I said to Morelli as my opening line, "have you seen Terry Gilman lately?"
"I saw her yesterday. Why?"
"You are such a jerk."